Hey everyone, welcome back to Blessed Child Podcast. This is your host Renee. Here we get into the proverbial meat and potatoes with the bonus episode with Aftab and myself. You know, I'm coming to realize that with these podcasts, what we are doing in the ex-muni community is creating a public consciousness about the abuses in the Unification Church. And we are making the invisible visible by creating precedents for action. The nature of human trafficking is discreet, and it's even more so when it's hiding behind the laws of religious freedom. So, you know, some of the key components to winning a case or making new laws is evidence. So in terms of human trafficking in the Unification Church, we're going to need to provide evidence of force, fraud, or coercion, negligence, malicious intent, money laundering, and the chain of command. Any definitions we come up with are going to need evidence and support, like paper trails, video footage, emails, speeches, recordings, texts. One debate might be that the Unification Church is run by volunteers, and that's a big debate against it being labor trafficking. But my argument for the volunteer work is that we were groomed from a young age. Our resistance was broken down as children. And then we were bred to be labor trafficked in this organization. I was also speaking to a Child of God survivor, and she told me that in the Children of God, they used alternate names. It was all very hush-hush, very much like sex trafficking with children. It was very hard for her to get any legal ramifications because of these reasons, but she told me some very hopeful information that, you know, the Unification Church is built like a business model, like an MLM. There's over 1,500 front organizations, and all of those have a paper trail. So actually, even though it seems very daunting, it's actually, once you start pulling and unraveling at the Unification Church, it all comes apart very easily. So it's just going to take a lot of elbow grease. It's going to take a lot of work and a lot of precedence and a lot of stories. So here we are doing that. I realized that, yeah, we're creating this collective consciousness, and it's one of my personal journeys. It's also something that I'm very passionate about. So I'm going to keep doing this. I'm going to keep using my gift of gab, and I'm going to ask for your support. If you enjoy this podcast, please consider liking, sharing, subscribing, and rating this podcast. I do all the production work single-handedly as a mom and a nurse and a tattoo artist. So any contribution would be greatly appreciated. And since I'm asking for support here, I might as well invite you, if you are so moved by Aftab's story and you would like to help contribute for her to reintegrate into society in a more comfortable way, you can go to the show notes and there's her PayPal account if you want to give a few bucks. I'm sure she will appreciate that. And I appreciate y'all listening to this podcast. I'm going to keep doing what I do, and I'm so excited about seeing where this goes. And validating our stories, creating the language. So here we go. Let's get into the episode.
The very insidious thing is that Mr. Fujita is running the New Hope Foundation International, which his main agenda is to raise awareness on human trafficking. Yeah. That's a legal organization.
Yeah.
But everything you talked about, what Mr. Fujita is doing, is the definition by the U.S. State of Health and Human Services, by their definition of human trafficking, that is exactly what he's doing.
Yeah.
And it says they're bringing in missionaries from Japan.
Yeah. Yep.
What are they?
I've seen the photos. I've seen things. They don't even know that this is a church. Like, they come in thinking they're going to learn how to do computer graphics, or they're going to like get the English education or something like that. So it's more about, I don't know. It's not, it's a different, they try to make a different business here and there to bring people in. Yeah, definitely. And that's how they make money as well. Like, that they're paying for this school in a sense.
My God.
So I would say, like, they're always making something new, but the foundation is that every summer they do this flower selling, like intensive flower selling of all the members they have. And now they're bringing the younger generation, the kids of their, you know, of the parents. And after that, they're able to put the money into whatever they want to put into, for example, having students from other overseas to take part of the classes. So they're making a gain, they're making gain production. So I was told for the longest time, hey, if you invest in this, you're able to kind of do your dream job, right? Because many people, we all like to do something creative. But yeah, technically we're not getting paid. But in their heads, like, if you invest in over time, you might get something out of it. I see it as like, there are plenty of people doing that in this world, but this was a little bit more tying with the whole spiritual thing. And they even try to add the spiritual context in the world. And for me, I was thinking like, this is never going to be big as they think it will be, because people like other stuff. This is not going to be ever like $1 million breakthrough. Like, it's never going to go that way. I realized that very early. So that's why I never joined them again. But there was a time that I would spend weekends to work on something, and it felt comforting at the time. But that's how it works in the church. It's very like, you feel like they're trying to be family, and then, but you're working for them. And I know plenty of stories from childhood friends telling me they were overworked. They don't even get to spend a weekend to have fun, or they don't have money to even have fun. Like, I already know a few of my friends like that. And some of them even went to college, like they went to college and learned something, but they end up coming back to this group because it just feels secure, as in they're going to still just provide like a place to stay and stuff, just minimum, you know, living situation. But to find an actual job in the world is harsh. They even say that to us. They're like, oh, working for people out there is not that fun, in a sense. It's true, but at the same time, this is what you got to go through at times, or else you're never going to win in life, is what I learned. So me and my sisters, honestly, the only ones that actually work like outside of the church. Everybody else like barely touched that kind of, you know, lifestyle, because it's so scary. And I understand, but it's just, we got to push ourselves. I realize you can't just hide all the time and rely on other people all the time, because it's almost blackmailing you. You know, that's how I live. That's how I had to battle those two. Do I want to be independent? Maybe be a little bit, still not in the, have so much money, but I have freedom. Or do I want to be part of this group, but I have no freedom? It was like always that battle. So this home right now I have, this apartment, but this is the first time my family feel like we have our own home, and nobody can tell us anything how to live in this home, because that's all we had to do in the past. We lived with, maybe in a big house, but we had to live with somebody else. We couldn't touch this side of the room, we couldn't touch that side of the room. It was always like, it was never our home. So even if it's a small home now, I love it so much. Like, it's, that's the kind of where it's going, you could say. And freedom. I'm happy than ever. Yeah, it's the freedom. That's the biggest thing I got out of that. Yeah. To make my own money, go out and get the things I need. Anything, just anything you need to do. I finally have freedom to do that.
And don't feel like you have a bondage to some trafficker. It sounds like they're recruiting people and then disabling them from their empowerment standpoint. They're disabling them.
I still got the better stick, end of the stick, honestly, because I was older, I kind of got out faster. But there's so many kids, they're still stuck in that world. And I always talk to my sister like, oh, our friend, this person still doesn't like change. He's still like the same person from 10 years ago. We're like always feeling that. And whenever we do meet someone that maybe kind of getting out, we're so happy. There's like maybe one or two, but most of them can't speak up because they just stuck because their parents are so involved in it that they can't like say anything, even if they think it's kind of weird. Right. So that is its own little, you know, that group for sure is.
Yeah. Well, the monitoring and the punishment and the fear and the fraud and the coercion, them calling you and telling you you can't do something or you can't spend your money this way. Or, I mean, that's terrifying. That's fear inducing, especially if your family's whole basic needs are dependent on the group. Like, it's very isolating to be that monitored, and it's scary. So thank you for speaking up about this subcult.
It sometimes confuses me because I think I tend to want to always appreciate things in life. At the same, it wasn't that great. It's just I don't know what else would have happened. That was the only life I had, so it's hard to see. Even if my family wasn't part of the group, were they able to survive still? But it just roots down from the beginning that the intentions weren't right. How my parents got married and everything that follows is them not being smart about it at this point because they weren't able to grow and understand. And, you know, that's where I want to talk about how the church, even though people say having this mind, like kind of like naivety, ignorance about the dangers of the world is bliss sometimes. But at the same time, when you do that, you miss a lot of red flags and you're taking advantage is where. Whether it's this group, whether it's the Los Angeles church, Vegas church, any church around the world, they're playing this part of your brain that makes me most mad about. Like, that really pisses me off because you're taking advantage of people's kindness, people's goodness, when most people are not that good, and the ones that are good are taken advantage of is the part I want. At least people to think about while they're in the church, I guess.
You're right. They're taking advantage of vulnerable people. Your parents were both migrant workers that came to the United States and didn't know how things worked. And instead of empowering them and giving them the tools and tips they needed to build a secure, quote unquote, ideal family that they preached, they saw two vulnerable people and took advantage and made them slaves. They took control of their basic needs and provided an illusion of safety and security. And then they secured whatever labor they needed at the time and then passed them off around to the other church leaders. So it's an awful picture. But it tells you the church's true intentions. If this church was really there for these people to have secure families, well, they would have cared about you. They would have got you in school. They would have got your dad set up with a career that he was talented at. They would have taught your mom basic needs about filing taxes and taking care of her children. But they didn't do that. And that is...
Their intentions is not to do that. Their intention is to... make their little kingdom. So it's Fujita and this. That's why I always curious when people start doing kind of things like this, why? But I'm thinking they have already told themselves why this is okay and they just do it, but they forget that you're hurting people. Like they're thinking, no, we have to be tough on people or something. Like, it's a very old culture. They're kind of like the older generation of Japanese that feel like even they're kind of misogynistic too. And they're kind of like, they see things different and they end up taking the divine principle as a way to like another, it's like a rule book of how to be a cult. You know, it's just like they took that and made their own thing. And this is where every new person that joins, I'm like, dude, no, at the time. And well, like I'm feeling that now, I didn't understand the time. But there's plenty of people that did escape, thankfully. There were times they're like, this is a little bit too much, but it's here and there. It's especially the people who have like less in their life, they can't go back to their hometown, is the ones that stays. And that's really sucks. But
yeah,
this group is really small though. Like, it's really like between 30 people or something. It's kind of shrinking at this point. They're kind of relying on their kids more, but right. I'm sure these kids will find out very quick, in my opinion. They're not, I don't know why, because I feel like it's a new generation where people are able to find information and stuff. So I'm hoping they're not going to be stuck in the situation. So
hoping this information, your story gets out. It's a rotating door, though. I mean, I saw that they were bringing in new recruits from Japan as missionaries. Yeah. And that's just a fancy word trafficking.
They do.
So really.
They do. And the funny thing, you know how they do matching by Reverend Moon before, but he does the matching for them. he literally does blessing, like he does the ceremony at the time. I don't know now, but at that time he did.
Oh my god,
there was plenty that didn't work out, but some just kind of forced it, and then or some kind of like basically he did control dating life for sure, like he for the new members, and there were some that broke the rule and they got shunned. I'm glad they didn't come back. They seemed they liked each other. So it's just kind of like, now I think about it, they really use the same tactics, but it's not Reverend Moon though. It's this person. And this is really like, when I think about it, it is destructive.
It's awful.
I'm laughing, but it was really weird for sure.
It's narcissistic and gross.
Exactly.
I bet he profited on it as well. The blessing. Exactly. Oh my God. It's trafficking.
Yeah. It's just so weird because I met him when he was not that position. He was literally just one of the members in the little corner of the like apartment. But now he finally starting to get you guys' own house and everything. But yeah, I already told you he was supporting Hyojinim, all these things to get the power he has. It's scary how when you look for power, they define anything they can do to do that. But as a kid, I really was just like, yeah, it was just really strange. Yeah. And I'll stop there. Is there any questions?
So quick, what happened after Hyojin died? Like who did you guys follow after that?
I don't know the name, but a different Chu child now, and he lives in Vegas. So I don't know. Because that's when I left and I don't really know too much. All I know is that one time I went to a Thanksgiving party or something. They would do that every year and we would come in and they had this like they said, oh, one of the child brought some like secondhand clothes they have. You guys can take some. And I remember looking through it, but I didn't like anything, but I was just like, I felt like a beggar. I felt like, why are they just like treating us like this? Like they just and then they're already nice clothes to some of them. They're like Gucci stuff. Like they're like putting, like I can tell they have money. And that's when I realized like this feels like this is definitely hierarchy. It's not like they actually love us, you know.
So
anyway, my mom hated secondhand clothes for the longest time. So she taught me this, how like she doesn't like to take secondhand clothes no matter who it is, because she feels like it doesn't feel good no matter what, even if you clean it.
Well, it's sick. It's like one of the Reverend Moon's kids has like a human trafficking organization in Vegas that's deflecting any accountability by running a human trafficking awareness network. Yeah. Like that's a perfect front. What else are they doing? You know, they traffic humans. You know, they traffic migrants. You know, they're getting Japanese members. Well, what else could they be doing?
Exactly. I don't know.
Vegas.
I'm sure they're doing whatever. That's why I think you say you wanted to mention was the video center.
Santa Monica.
Yeah, they have it there. I've heard it all the time. I went there once or twice, but it's literally as a video center. They have the tapes, someone come in, look at the tapes, see if they can join the church. It's always they're always trying to recruit and fundraise, our witness bite that way. And definitely I know enough parents of the friends I had working there, and my dad was going to work there, but they consider him to be lazy in a sense. But I think he just thought it was pointless. Even though he was a member, he just like, he didn't like doing that kind of stuff. So it's kind of, he wanted to do it his own way. But there was plenty of like a hierarchy in that in itself too. Who did the best like at finding the most members kind of situation too. And my good friend, the one that read the books, her dad was the top. But unfortunately he died early because he overworked himself and he barely met his family. that really made me sad. But I don't know how she feels. I think they pushed the fact that he was like honorable and he was very special. So they put him on this pedestal, even though he was only in his early 50s. It's just like, that's the first time I experienced like death. And it didn't make me happy to think that's might going to be a life for some people just because they're, I don't know, it just didn't make me feel good. Yeah, this. But yeah, definitely there's the video center there, and they made one here too. Maybe a little bit different style. I have never visited it. My sister did talk about it. They're always at the Fremont. It's on the, okay, you don't know, sorry. In Vegas, we have the Fremont area, the downtown. They're always standing there with signs, talking about a human trafficking sign, and trying to get people to go there. So, because most people go over there. So it's every weekend thing at the time when I was still part of them. It's hard to, I don't know. There's so much going on that I can't explain everything, but all I know is that they're very good at hiding it. It's just all I know.
Yeah, it's really sad. Yeah. Oh man.
I still care about them. It's weird, like this part of me.
Of course.
But at the same time, I'm like, you know, it's not okay. You know?
Yeah, you can have space for a lot of feelings. That's human. What you've seen is a huge injustice. It's a huge civil rights issue. What is happening is not okay. It's not okay. And you care about these people. And they might not even, they don't even realize.
The funny thing is that the main church here in Vegas, they had a fight once. So I was in that fight. They had a meeting to talk about how we should, I guess they're trying to make like a union. Like they're trying to like, let's bring peace in a sense. But it went the opposite way because they're saying, we hear about this Fujita group. What are they doing? We want to know. So they brought them in to talk. And so one girl asked, they were just asking questions. And then at some point, one of the members of the Fujita group said, you guys been saying mean stuff about us, la 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 la. And she was like saying all these things that she can say, Fujita-san, he is such a good guy. She was very like defensive. So then they're all like, no, that's not what we're trying to do here. Like, da, da, da. So it became a fight and I was starting to cry. I was like, I was only what, 17, 18. So I was like, what is going on here? I don't know why I was even there, but because I thought, you know, these are the people I know. I remember people who said things that I never thought they would say. Like they were usually quiet. And I was like, wow, this is how they really feel. So I think that made me open my eyes more that, wow, this is really bad than I thought. And then, but at the same time, I would say the main church, I call the main church, but like, they're not any different though. I don't know why they're saying all these things to them because to me, they're no difference.
Right.
It's just a much bigger organization with Hakshahan, but it's the same thing.
you're absolutely right. It follows this like ML, it's like a multi-level marketing with like fraud and coercion. Like we promise all these things, we're going to do all these great things. You recruit more people, you get more money. You just have all these peons. It's the same. Yeah, you're right.
Exactly.
It is the
same.
Even
when I was still going to the Vegas church, before I even left, I still was already getting tired of it. I got so tired of it that I started to say, I asked them, can I be the Sunday school teacher? Because I want to see if I can learn from beginning to end, from the basics. And I don't know, I just felt like there was no purpose sitting in church because they will always show the video, like kind of like from Korea video.
And
even the people in the crowd were saying like, this one again. Like they were really like getting tired of it because it was just propaganda, you know, it's just, even though they don't know that, it was just, you can tell, they're just trying to put it in your face. And everyone was, they knew they were tired of it, but they couldn't stop it. And I eventually just did the Sunday school instead. I enjoyed that more because I wanted to hear what the young people say. But even that, after I did that for, right before I left the church, I realized there isn't anything I didn't learn. It is not something I want to be part of. I realized that really helped, like just thinking that I didn't learn enough. So I started trying to learn more, but I read the Chongsongyeong even, like it's like a bigger book.
Oh, I know.
So I just read some of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my dad and the pastor gave me a PDF file and I was looking at my phone God. Every day. And I was thinking like, okay, I got to read this. Maybe that's my issue. But then I was like, no, this is not the issue. The issue is that God never answers me. Like I keep praying, but I don't get an answer. And I think that really like, but that still didn't help me leave exactly. That really when I wanted to leave is when I felt really threatened. Like I felt like, oh man, they're going to really take control of my life. That's when I was like, oh, this is really.
With your confession, is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't know why that was a big deal, but because it felt like I had a genuine heart when I had a crush on someone. And why does it feel like it has to be evil? It's just I couldn't help it. Like it was too much to deny that part of me because I'm a very passionate, emotional person. So I really didn't want to think that's not part of me. But some people are able to suppress it and I feel bad for them.
Compartmentalize.
Yeah. I don't know if you know Akira-san, Watanabe. I think he's the youth pastor here. And he and his wife are quite destructive to me. They're pretty like trying to, they act super friendly, but then I can tell they're really pushing young people to be a certain way.
Are they the ones that got the confessions or?
Yeah, the wife especially. She was like that person. And the guy, I thought he was the coolest guy, but the thing is he's part of the system too. And he's so like super like into this that he doesn't realize he's hurting people too. And
yeah, this
is very upsetting.
Psychologically manipulative. Those confessions. For somebody to be collecting that kind of personal information is it's a fear tactic. And anybody that does that is either a psychopath or B, they have no empathy and they're part of the trafficking system. Those people are dangerous. Very, very dangerous.
They're always having another workshop and these workshops you have to pay for. So I never went to like a 7-day workshop, but just even for 3 days, it's tiring. It is. They'll try to make it fun, but every time I see like a new guest come in, I feel like they're gonna get. I almost see the process from beginning to end, like whether they're gonna join or not.
Oh yeah.
And I've met ones that never came back, but I've met plenty that stayed, and I saw how that could have been my parents. Honestly, like that's I can see. How they were vulnerable that time, and this is why they're joined and they're praised so much, that's like bomb. All the time, every Sunday they're like, yay, good for this person, and today he's a member, he says, and they're like, they had a whole announcement.
Oh my God,
I felt so uncomfortable looking at that. I was like, oh man, this is, that's it. And that person, this one person I'm thinking of, I felt like really close to him because we were the same age. We went to the same high school and we were just similar in many ways. And I just thought he was a cool person. But when he joined, every time he texts me, it's all about church stuff. And I'm very like trying to tell him, I don't want this anymore. I'm not going to join any of your workshops or anything you have because that's not what I want to do. But if you want to have a coffee, have something, I'm fine with that. But that never happens. You lose people's like main identity. That's how I feel. And I really hate that.
Yeah. Those workshops, exactly what you said, what you were seeing unfold was the breaking down of their resistance, the breaking down of their autonomy. It's almost hypnotic. I don't know how the church has access to this kind of like KCIA structure of brainwashing, but it's very systematic. It's lack of sleep, lack of protein, vigorous singing to open up the psyche and unify people to socialize them, on one main idea, and then stripping away of their basic needs and replacing it with the traffickers' supply source, and then giving a purpose. And it's a perfect formula for human trafficking. But then you paint it with a pretty picture, like the fiddler, like the Peter Piper, of this is for the sake of others, and then they come willingly.
That reminds me of all the fasting conditions now I think about
that too. Yeah. Breaking
that's
down.
That's also extreme.
It is.
I never did it though. I always try to find a way to get away.
This church is, I mean, when we could talk about this endlessly, but yeah. The tactics that they use, it's incredible. I don't know who started it. But it's dangerous.
It's very chilling because you don't see it at front. Like, no. It's just, you don't see it at all.
Singing sounds great. Yeah.
It's so easy to get into it if you don't understand this stuff. And of course, I was born in it, but still, I wish I was able to, like, be a little bit rebellious. But definitely people who, like, tend to want to just be a good person tends to stay, no matter how, like, you know, educated you are. It just like takes, like, that's why I asked my dad why you want to stay still. And he said there was the one moment he had at church where he felt like he prayed and he got an answer. And, or he listened to another person's story that felt like he touched him. So sometimes that kind of ties them, because it feels so real. It feels like this is your experience. But I'm trying to tell him, like, yes, that is your experience, but doesn't have to be part of this church. But it's really hard, I can tell, for most people.
You know, that's such a good point. And I have this soft spot in my heart for the people I grew up with in the church, where I hold them in a really high light, because I've met so many selfish people out in the real world. But I think what it is, I think it's just humans being humans. And in the church, you can peel away a lot of vulnerability, and you can see how beautiful people are when you're hypnotized and vulnerable. And we were in an open state of vulnerability and victimization. And so we actually let people, in a weird way, we let people get really close to us, but also held them at arm's distance. And it's like a very strange multi-factor dynamic, because I don't think I've ever been in a situation, you know, where I'm doing stress squats with 15-year-olds, or I'm on a 3-day fast with a team of 6 people living in a van for 21 days. Like, I've never been in those really intimate, stressful situations since leaving the church. But I think if I was with any random people they pick out of the town, I would trauma bond, but also see how beautiful they could be or can be or are. So the church gives a really unique experience with being able to socialize with, like, does that make sense?
Yeah, it's not, doesn't happen often. So it does feel very unique in experience, because most people are not that involved with each other in society. I'm learning how much people do ignore each other often, unless it's necessary. But in the church is very, like, kind of, it's in the sense I have more, how you call it, I exercise my emotional or mental self more stronger than some people. That's what it feels like. I understand, have to express myself more than some people, because we're always doing confessions. Ooh. We're always doing, like, talking about my, you know, experience today. Like, we're very, some of us really good at it, because we had to be put in that situation so much.
Oh yeah. Interpersonal intelligence.
Yeah. Yes, that's the word. Yes.
I growing up in a very confined environment with a lot of other kids of different ages and even adults, your insight on your teacher taking you for runs because you came to the conclusion that he was sad. Like, that's very insightful for you to have that observation. So you're interpersonal.
Despite other things that we don't talk about at all, but that is part of it. Yes.
Yeah. You have an interpersonal intelligence as well as an emotional awareness from coming so far. You have to have a certain level of self-awareness. So all that working together is gonna give you a strong foundation for just reflection. And yeah. I think that's a really important part of the conversation to come out of, like, victimhood to survivor, is understanding the multi factors that led to the situation. And fortunately or unfortunately, it can be a beautiful picture to be trafficked with other people that you grow to love.
Exactly.
Yeah. I was shocked when I first heard your story. I didn't think there could be such a, like, a subgroup doing, like, such intense things with kids. I didn't think there was a second generation Mooney not going to school until they were 10 years old.
My situation was pretty unique, but yeah, for sure there was plenty of kids that became kind of narrow-minded. Yeah, that's for sure. But at the same time, I don't know. I think I can't help but think it's worse. I don't know why, but I know that's part of being in this situation. We tend to think that way. We forget ourselves that it was painful. But I think my family was pretty poor, that the point that even members we weren't forced to, like, do a lot of things because we couldn't afford it. But that's where I was able to step back and, like, see, oh, why would I want to even do that for them? Because I can see it's not healthy. Like, I barely gave, like, donations to church and stuff because I couldn't afford it. But I was like, would I feel better if I did? But then I thought, well, why? I don't know if I need to do this. It was always a constant battle being a good member. And I'm sure for any church, it's kind of like that.
That's a good point. With the money aspect, I feel like a second generation, we saw our parents give a lot of money to the church.
Exactly.
And so we reserve that financial, it's called financial abuse, but we reserve that and we don't do it. But instead of extracting money from second gen, the church has flipped and now they're extracting time, yeah. Which is labor, which also equals money. So, like, even though we're not giving monetary money, we are giving time. I've given That's so much time. And I don't know when the cycle ends, because I feel like time is just, if not more valuable than money.
Exactly. Exactly. I've been thinking about that a lot. Yes. Was there any other question?
There was another question. Somebody had mentioned something about a Congo justice. Does that ring any bells?
Same thing. That's the human trafficking. They want to, like, tell people so that they can help and donate. So there was a one time a clip of this Congo guy, like a documentary that somebody said, there's this really bad, like a dictator kind of person. And from there, they were kind of telling the world, like, this is a really bad kind of person. We should find a way to rid of this. So taking a bad real world situation, they decided to make, like, a nonprofit for it. So that's what I know. And I know they actually made a documentary once. Don't take it that seriously. I don't remember, but all I know is that they were very much adamant to, like, do this as if they really feel bad for these people. But at the same time, they still don't realize what they're doing is the same thing, you know? So I think it was from whoever created this, she just personally wanted to do this, but in the expense of getting help from this group in order to do this, in a sense. Because I think she wanted to do this in her life, but she doesn't have the funds or whatever. And that's also, like, really sad to hear that every time someone wants to do something good, they have to take from others. And life is kind of like that. I don't know if you know The Good Place, that movie, that show. No matter what you do, especially the show, like, they're always having something extracted from somebody else. And it's really hard to do the right thing. So I really personally don't think this lady is being bad. I really don't. I really think she's trying to be the good version of herself. And she doesn't realize this is also not good. You know, like, she thinking everyone's willing to help her.
Yeah.
And they do show that emotion. Like, we're going to fundraise to help you guys. And because they feel that they're doing something good. But we they already don't have identities why they do that many times. Many of them don't have anything at home, or they don't have foundation or education. So they feel some purpose. So that's why it's really, in a sense, messed up, because this is a system that was created to make their world go around. And nobody's complaining unless they feel finally ostracized. But besides that, they feel happy with each other, in a sense. So it's very complicated.
It is, but it makes perfect sense. So what I'm seeing is that you're talking about the goodwill of people that were raised in a cult MLM. And so subconsciously, the goodwill that you want to do you emulate what you were taught, right? So if you only know the structure of the Unification Church, which is an MLM that takes advantage of other people and shames them and shuns them and coerces them into giving the time, money, and labor to make goodwill happen, then you're going to do the same thing without even knowing it. Like, if I needed help in the cult, I would expect everyone to get band together and help my purpose, when that's a severe lack of boundaries and it's manipulative to a certain point. But that's what I was taught. So that's how I operated. That was my operating system. So like, even if you have goodwill and good intention to stay in the Unification Church, you're going to subconsciously follow the same structure in your life. And that's dangerous. And that's why it's important to talk about this, because this is like a big factor that we don't really talk about, is the subconscious influence that it has on people's goodwill and how we carry out our actions.
Definitely. I know everybody said they know enough people that were really genuinely good people. And this is where it gets confusing to say this is a cult, because it really doesn't feel like that.
And, yeah.
But being like good-willed also kind of go hand in hand with ego, in my opinion, because you want to feel good. You want to feel like you're the best person or best version of yourself. But sometimes, even me, bad things hit me and I realize I'm not perfect. I've done some things that was selfish, and that's why I'm able to say, maybe I'm not always doing the right thing. So why would you say you're doing the right thing right now? Like, for some people, you need to take a step back and think about it. But some people are on the roll, like they're doing the right thing. They think they're succeeding, but sometimes that's not true. We all have made mistakes, and it's very hard. It's a very, like, we humans, I feel like I'm not saying for everybody, but like I personally feel like I have to struggle with not being arrogant and thinking I know everything, and that is hard still. I don't know why this was the case, but I think a lot of the Reverend Moon's kids are like that, almost, because they've been taught that way. That's why, even though if they know the truth of the church, they still can't get away from it, because they're so convinced they're still special. It's really like a poison in the brain. It's just kind of, you have to get enough beatings from the world to let you know that, in a sense. Yeah. I was being treated so kindly, but now I need to learn, in a sense, to see reality and get rejection to understand I'm just one person in this world that's not significant to some people, and that's okay. Like, that's what's hard to deal with, for sure.
I feel like what you just said, sometimes I get lost in those thoughts and it can be debilitating. Well, I don't know what actions to take, because what if I'm, you know, what if it's selfish? What if it's wrong? I'm not right. And I deal with those all the time. I don't know if that's a post-cult like symptom.
Yeah. And while I was leaving the church, I watched a lot of videos talking about this enlightenment thing. You know, I don't know where it was going, but I definitely had like an ego break. I felt this strange emptiness, but reassuring emptiness. And I know people can get that out of drugs and stuff these days, but at least I really think I had that moment. But easily you can get kind of go back to how you were before. But since I remember that feeling, I can kind of practice and go back again. It really feels like this nothingness, and that whatever you do is not important, really. And that you're just really weak little being that just wants to try to survive in this world. And nobody wants to think about that, but it is part of us. And I always going through this emotion. I don't know how to explain with words. That's why I like art, to express myself. But I think that's a very good, something that people need to experience, I really think, because you forget what you're doing and you need to realize, wait a minute, no. Who are you? Like, you were not existing in this world at some point. You exist now. You just got all this information from everybody. But maybe step back a bit. I don't know.
No, that is absolutely beautiful. What you've described is ego death. And it is, I think it's an absolutely necessary step when you leave a self-limiting belief system, which is the cult. You have to break that. It's where you get into neuroplasticity. You break that idea of yourself, that idea of your ego, and you can transform. And I went through that too. And it's amazing that you're naming this. We were in a very self-limiting, confining belief system. And in order to leave that, you have to reach a state of flexibility. And I think it's described as ego death. And because we were very biased, we grew up in a very black and white world. At some point, you have to reach a pinnacle moment in your life where that just doesn't matter anymore. And you can see reality for its multiple factors instead of just a black and white thinking. That's beautiful that you named that. And I think that's where you find,
that's where I think people need to, so I notice my English, sometimes I use certain words, but I don't mean it really. I'm just trying the best to say certain things when I say we people and stuff. But I mean, like, I thought about this a lot, and I feel that many times that's the issue, is people didn't really accept, almost like a crime. Like, you just have to finally accept that thing you did. And it's so hard for people. And I've been like watching a lot of crime shows too, but like, actually people who get committed a crime is the most brave person when they finally confess, depending on the crime, of course. But that's so hard. Like, that is very hard. Nobody wants to do that. And I'm sure like this group will never say what they did, because nobody wants to say that unless they're cornered finally. And that's very rare for anybody, but
right.
It's hard.
I think it can be a relief to take accountability finally, because you don't have to keep doubling down on your mistakes because you're in denial that it has to work. You can finally break and be like, okay, I did something wrong. I can't keep up this facade anymore. Someone help me figure this out. I think
that's exactly what happened to me. After I lose everything is when I finally can start over. But I feel like many people can leave the church because they have still something that they're holding on to. It's until you break down, and which is sad, that's the only way almost, because it's very frustrating. I don't want no one to go through that pain, but sometimes that is the only way to understand this.
I've talked to a lot of ex-Moonies, and at some point we all go through a suicidal ideation. And I think you could call it ego death, or you could call it spiritual suicide, which is what we coined it earlier on the show. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely a real place that coming out of the church, we've found ourselves in. And I like to frame it as ego dissolution or ego death sounds a lot less painful than spiritual suicide. So I really like that. And it's more reflective of like neuroplasticity and being willing to take accountability that maybe your brain wasn't formed the right way. And it's okay to take accountability to change it, because it's never too late.
Exactly.
Wow. And your English is perfect. Your English is perfect. I understand what you're trying to, it's good. You're really good at communicating.
People that know me, I tend to be a very, like, into my world a lot. Like, I'm very, like, I take a second to think what I'm going to say sometimes. So I just want to point that out, because I guess I'm insecure. But at the same time, I like that part of myself too, because I feel I always analyze things more, not just skip through things. But definitely listening to you talk, I feel like you're really good at pinpointing things, and I appreciate that, because I think I tend to deny a lot of things, but you're like, nope, this is bad. This is bad. I was like, oh, you're right. You're right. That is bad.
That is so bad. Yeah. No, I think what it is you have a very abstract mind, and I do too. And this is the second time we're talking, but I love the way our conversation develops. I think you're extremely analytical from a very young age in the group that you grew up in. You were seeing things that other people could not see. Yeah.
I felt like I did. And I was like, why you guys don't see this? But then I felt so pressured to be good. So I, when I was younger, I barely spoke to, like, my sister literally spoke for me. So I didn't talk to people. I literally did not talk. Like, I was like, And if they asked me a yes or no question, I'd be like, I don't know. Or maybe I like that. I don't know. So identity was very hard for me at the time. I was very, kind of mute, I guess, like almost. That we're still trying to figure that out, why that happened. Did somebody say something that made me want to talk? I don't know. My parents, I don't know. But my sister went opposite. She's the most talkative person. she will know how to get around with the adults, you could say, from a young age, because she learned good vocabulary and the way to socialize. But for me, I think I tend to now become the observer, and then that's what I did most of my life. Now you can tell I've been practicing on my social skills by going to work, school, all this stuff. But before, I would never tell anybody anything what I'm going through, and people are like, she's so kind of mysterious.
Wow, you've really come full circle. I don't know if you listened to Falling Out, but there was a child.
I love that.
That's a good one, right? Another girl, another woman that was on Falling Out said that she suffered and battled being mute as a child as well. And
really?
Her story was because she was abandoned at a church nursery.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. Yeah.
Right. And you also had a very insecure attachment style, as you mentioned before. So you're the second person. I'm just wondering if there's a correlation with the attachment styles in the early childhood years.
I'm not sure if it was in Falling Out or if actually it was in my previous episodes, but we're seeing patterns emerging with early childhood abandonment and being mute. I'm wondering if any of you listeners also struggle with speech and expressing your emotions or expressing yourself, possibly. Could be from repressing your authentic self for so long. Could be from a lifetime of performative action. I'm wondering what are the long-term ramifications of that. So we can explore that later in a different episode. Let's get back to our original episode.
And, you know, since I was a daycare teacher, I had to learn about children a lot.
Yeah.
Really took classes. So I kind of understand the psychology of how the child brain works. And 1 to 3 years old really is a big deal. And it really does, it really shows, depending on the parent, it really changes the child so much. It was not whether they're in a church or not. It was like any parent I've met, their lifestyle is really, really bad. I've seen foster situations. I've seen single parent situations. Well, it's such a big deal. And it's so sad that's the case. And very few healthy families out there. But the strange thing that this church was trying to use that as the way to like encourage us to make a perfect family, right? So it's always like, oh, outside people don't know what they're doing. Let's do our best. But this like always feels fake. And but now I'm accepting the world as it is though now. Like I'm trying not to fix every problem. I think that was an issue too for me. It's like, oh no, this is a sad situation. This is not perfect for someone. I wish that something can be done, yes. But at the same time, I cannot fix everyone's problems. And that really, I don't know why I had to take that to heart all the time. It's just not, because I'm like, I have problems. I need to fix my problems.
Yeah.
I can't afford to help every person on the, you know, I still feel so much sympathy for homeless people. I feel sympathy for anybody. And, but I'm like, I can't take care of everybody.
Yeah.
That's okay. That's part of how being a human.
As many times as you've chanted, live for the sake of others, you have to say, I can't take care of everybody's problem. You have to undo that conditioning to feel responsible.
It's really, really new thing for me to understand this. Even going to work, I don't need to smile at every single person, I realized. Like, yes. I got so used to being friendly to every single person, no matter who they are, because I thought that's the right thing to do. But sometimes it's not necessary, I realized. You can still be friends, actually. But everybody wants their space. Everyone wants to do what they need to do in their life. And I'm so used to how church did it and love bombing all the time. And I started to do it too. But then I thought, no, this is not genuine. I need to figure out who I am. And it's okay to be mad. This is also a new thing I think many women go through, right? How to be angry, yeah. How to be upset about things and say things in a rough way is okay. It's not, you don't have to be elegant all the time. So I'm a super feminist in a sense at this point, because I've dealt with so much like misogyny that I'm really adamant about, especially with my background, my father's background. I very like anything that's against women, I'm pretty like, nope, that's not true. No, you know, toxic masculinity is part of it too. So all these like things society has created, also I'm very like want to, you know, let people know that that's not true, and women can do this, men can do this, like all these stuff, you know.
It's good to think outside the box. It's good. And like, once you get out of a cult like you do, it's hard to get back in, even if it's society's box. And it's good.
I can never go back.
No. Yeah, never go back in. It's okay.
I already took, was it the red pill? I already took it. It's already too late at this point.
Yeah.
That movie was good. So I watched it actually more recently.
Oh, wow.
Twice. And I was like, oh, this is what it's about. Oh,
from
the
totally
longest time. Another thing that's been sheltered from me for the longest time is this naivety of like violence, you could say, or like anything gross. I was very sheltered from it because I was scared of that. And I'm still dealing with that. I couldn't watch anything with blood or anything for the longest time. And I was thinking, why? It's because I had too much empathy for the situation. I don't know if this is just my thing, how I grew up to think about people all the time, but I'm learning to like let go of that too. And it feels kind of weird, but at the same time comforting that I can just be able to finally kind of be part of this group in a sense. Like kind of like everybody else watch this stuff too. I'm like, oh, it's not that bad. It's just, and I'm going off point, but it's just.
So interesting. I wonder if our listeners can relate to that too.
Being this like good girl kind of thing, but then changing to a little bit more on the rougher scale, you could say. Like, it's just being more punk, being more like into all the dark side of life, and it's okay to feel that, you know, like
absolutely.
I still love the shining, like how you call it, like I like this happy stuff in life, all the cute stuff in life, all the colorful things in life, but at the same time I realize I need to take in account that there are sad things too. And I don't know if that has anything to do with church, but all I know is that I felt like I was very like thinking God has everything done for me in a sense, you know what I mean? Like life after death, everything is already planned, so I don't need to worry about the bad things. I still shouldn't worry too much about it. But definitely, I think I was naive. And this is the one thing that I have to come to terms with, that it's okay that happened, but I can start learning now. And I don't know if you heard of, whenever someone leaves the church, it become a little bit sensitive to a lot of things. So I tend to wanted to, in a sense, leaving the church, I was like, now I'm going to try everything. Right, all the bad things they said. except I didn't really want to get into like drugs or anything. But right. I was like, I want to start drinking, you know, get sexual, and I don't know, just all the things I can think of that was considered bad, which it wasn't as bad as I thought. But then I think I went a little too far as like thinking I have to try every thing that people do, and I realized that's not true. That is not true. I don't have to do all the things that consider like rebellious, and because this world is its own world too. The church was its own thing, but the world has its problems too. And I had to understand that, who am I as a person? What do I want to do? What is good for me? I realized drinking only half a wine is good enough for me because I get red. I don't need to get into it. I realized I don't want to do any drugs because I took it once accidentally, and I realized I don't need this. This is not for me. And all these, and even dating my boyfriend, I thought, do I need to date more guys first? But I like this guy. I don't want to change my mind. It's like this little things that I'm like, it's okay. I'm the person I am. I don't need to be crazy to feel like I'm part of the outside world now. That's how I felt. So, yeah. But it's fun. I would still say it's more fun, this life, than the previous life.
Wow. Do you hear that, everybody? Aftab's words of wisdom. You don't have to snap like a rubber band. You can, you know, when you leave the church, it's a really real motivation to like try everything, but you don't have to define yourself. And that, yeah, that's a great bit of wisdom to share, because it's very true.
I realized I just wanted to do things I was wanted to do as a kid. Just draw. That's it. That's all I cared about. Go see nature, draw, eat good food. Even that wasn't there at the when I was young. I had not enough stuff at the time. But now I'm like, I'm able to afford it. And I think that's the best thing I can have in life at this point.
Yeah, your freedom.
Yes.
Beautiful. Okay. I think we got all the questions answered. We put a little, maybe like an extra hour on this podcast, so it'll be a bonus. But you deserve the platform. I think people can give you an hour and a half of their time, because you're amazing. You're an amazing human. And thank you for sharing with me. Yeah. I could talk with you for hours. I would love to catch up with you again.
You can always talk. Anything comes in your mind, questions. This is kind of new still for me. I'm sweating so much right now, but I'll be honest, I am still kind of like nervous about this going out, but at the same time, there's nothing to lose, really. There's really nothing to lose at this point, and the fact that a lot of things has happened made me really sad. It means it really did mean a lot. There's so much more to this story. There's so much reasons why I couldn't do a lot of things, because I got I feel like another ego death has happened, because it feels like I finally kind of had to like face this fear I had, because I still felt like I was hiding behind a wall that people know I left the church, but they still don't get it. Like, they still see me in one way, and I try not to bother them too. And that's okay. Everyone has their rights, you know, but maybe I'm a little tired of it now. I'm a little bit tired of that. And if you want to still be my friend, that's fine. But at this point, I'm kind of moving on. I'm actually really like, can't just being your friend just because we were childhood friends, you know, that kind of stuff. So
You've opened yourself up for a lot of change. And I thank you that I could be the person that kind of walked you through this process, and that you could share this publicly with so many people, because this is the narrow path that some of us are lucky enough to choose. And it is narrow because everybody does it. It's invisible work, but we're making it visible, and more people can join once they actually see how to do it.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. This is the end of Human Trafficking in Vegas. Just a reminder, if you feel so moved, please reach out to Aftab, make a donation, help support her and her journey. And thank you for listening. Like always, take care of your mental, and I'll talk to you again soon.